Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another Jerry Will Show. I want to remind everyone who's listening on our radio server that this will be switched off at the end of 1 hour. If you're interested to hear the entire program, we invite you to do that by becoming a member over at patreon.com/expeditions. Becoming a member at jerrywillshow.com, you'll get to hear and watch the entire program, plus have access to numerous other shows that I've done with a host of fantastic people who've been our guest. All right, I want to let you know that tonight our guest is none other than the alien hunter himself, Daryl Sims. I've known of Daryl a long time, and several years ago he and I met up over in Washington State, became friends right away, and I have the highest esteem for him. The work that he does is absolutely fantastic. And I'm not just saying that because he's a guest. I'm saying it because that's how I feel about it. Daryl is an amazing guy, full of integrity and smart as hell. So I want to bring him on, and we're just going to chat. The phone lines will be open during the second hour. And hold on. Brent can't find the link. All right. No, the link should be just fine. Why don't you double check, pull it up on your... Okay. Well, anyway, pull it up on your end to make sure everything is good. That was none other than Kathy. As you know, she rides shotgun on all of this. Anyway, the phone lines will be on open a second hour, and... if you don't have the information to call in, whether international or within United States or Canada, that information will be up on the screen when it's time. Aside from that, gosh, let's bring on my buddy, Daryl Sims. How you doing, Daryl?
Hello, Jerry. How are you?
I'm doing fine. It's really good to have you back on here. I know you were on, over a year or so ago, and I know a lot's happened since then, but I've been following a bit of what you're up to. I try to keep track of that because you never know, we might just drop through Texas. And if we do, I wanted to make sure you're home because, well, we want to stop by for a cup of coffee.
You're welcome anytime. You know that.
I know. And I appreciate your hospitality. So, what are we talking about tonight? What is really on your mind? What do you want to let everyone know about?
Well, it's some fun stuff. I think talk a little bit about the metals, since some of the people are kind of interested in some of the metals that supposedly Congress has been looking at behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. Two of the people that they're who own those metals are friends of mine. One of them is one of my abductees. And just a lot of little fun stuff like that. When we were at Roswell, Dr. Frank Kimber found some of the, what may be the Roswell material, and we can talk about that a little bit as well. And some real interesting things happened at his table whenever we used some of our equipment on some of that metal.
Wow, that sounds really interesting. You know, with all this, I don't know if you'd call it disclosure proper, but with the Pentagon admitting that they don't know what these things are, I think they're kind of like us, many of us. We don't know what they are either, although we seem to be willing to talk more about what we think they are, and they're a little bit more guarded in that respect. But what do you think about all of this footage that's come out and all? It seems like it was a big announcement to me, and the rest of the world was just kind of like, oh, how about that? And they went back to crocheting.
back to news as usual, news at six. Yeah. That's par for the course. I had numerous discussions with different UFO investigators about, is this the big disclosure and so on? And I told them, in my opinion, it isn't. And they said, when do you think it's coming? I said, I don't think it is. I said, disclosure in terms of what you and I would want to see, I doubt will ever happen in that regard, unless it happens through individuals like ourselves and those who have evidence who will come forward and talk about it. I think one of the most important things about the so-called Tic Tac and other objects that have been seen by the Navy right. ships and reported on night vision, a lot of people don't understand that some of the films that we were shown that they said, look at this, isn't this amazing? One of those films is like 14 years old.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and then some of the other films are like a year or two old. I know for a fact that they're seeing two and three of these on each coast daily. Daily. So well, what are we something? Not seeing? That's what I'm interested in.
Absolutely. And our son, Bryce, was working in the fishing industry up in Washington. You might remember, I told you we were there going to visit him and his family. And he was telling us that it's a well-known thing. When you go far out into the ocean off of Washington, I don't know what the name of that part of the ocean is. Let's call it North Pacific, I suppose. But it's a well-known thing. You see UFOs lifting up out of the water. You see very huge objects, luminous, under the water, just scooting by. He saw something as well. And he was all excited the first time he saw it. He said, shouldn't we call somebody and report this? And the old guy that he was with said, it doesn't do you any good. Just watch and wonder what the hell they are. And that's about all you can do. So he saw this on a lot of occasions. The folks that are in what we call the seat of authority, waiting for them to acknowledge that there's something here that is for sure not of this world. Now, I don't know if it means it's from a different, maybe parallel universe or another planet, I mean, another star. I think you and I know where my feelings are on that, but keeping it as a broad, you know, aperture, waiting for them to say, oh yeah, well that's what it is. I don't think I don't think this disclosure isn't that, and I'm not sure they ever will, but they're not really the experts on this. You know, folks like you are the experts on this. You've done the work. You've gone out in the field. You have the samples. You've seen things. You've even found implants, for Christ's sakes, things that cannot possibly have been made on this world. You know, in my opinion, and I'm sure a lot of people watching, you're more the voice of authority, but the masses are programmed to listen to people sitting behind desks. I call them soft shoe shufflers. They don't even get out and see much more than their desk, their environment, and maybe they see some classified things. I don't think they're going to be talking about this anytime soon.
Well, I think you're right, Jerry. One comment about your son and his observations of USOs or undersea objects.
Mm-hmm.
When Columbus was on his way over here, in this Nina Pinta and the Santa Maria, they reported in their logs seeing ship a craft underwater as well.
I think that was quite
fascinating. Some people think all these are the government or some government or whatever, but the fact is that these objects have been around for a while, to say the very least, and have been reported in ancient times.
Yes, they have. As a matter of fact, I think maybe Jules Verne, who was way ahead of his time, might have, you know, incorporated stories like this into, you know, the book of his. Was 50,000 Leagues Under the Seas? Was that the name of it?
Yes.
But there have been rumors about this forever, really. I mean, people living under the ocean, you know, Neptune lived in the ocean, came out of the ocean, one of the Greek gods. Yeah, there's been a lot of stuff going on for a very long time, and it just seems a pity that we're not being told by the soft shoe shufflers what the actual truth of the situation is, as though we're children and we really couldn't handle it, I suppose. But tell us what you found. You've got proof, right?
Well, we've got I think some pretty decent evidence, and one illustration of that, perhaps, that the audience, your audience, might appreciate, is Dr. Russell Targ was a remote viewer for the Central Intelligence Agency, and he was at a scientific panel that I was on at Contact in the Desert about a year and a half ago, and in that meeting, he talked about two things that he saw in remote viewing for the CIA. He said, number one, we remote viewed the Kremlin and a particular safe, and just to see what was in it and so on. And he and this other lady were involved. And he said, that's the one thing about remote viewing that bothers me the most. And everybody's like, what do you mean? He said, well, he said, problem is when you're at remote viewing some of this stuff, someone else might be in your place or where you're at while you're doing something else. And he gave an example, a little example. He said, we were remote viewing the Kremlin, and she and I both knew for a fact that somebody was remote viewing us while we were remote viewing the Kremlin. He said, wow. That was most distressing. He said, the second thing that was important, he said, is we remote viewed a UFO. And he said, in that case, and of course, this upset a lot of people in the audience because a lot of them want to hear very positive, uplifting stories of UFOs. He said, we found dozens of dead human beings on board that craft.
You know, are you familiar with Ingo Swann, his book?
I am familiar with Ingo Swann.
I can't remember the name of the damn book now. He was a friend of ours. And I asked him about this book, and he said, everything in it's true. It's absolutely the truth. And I said, okay, so you were remote viewing these people, and they noticed you. How is that possible? And he said, they knew I was there. They knew that I was looking around and that I was there. And then, you know, they started noticing me, and I decided I needed to get the hell out of there. I didn't know what was going on. Penetration. Thank you, Kathy. And he went on, you know, of course, the rest of the book. If you folks haven't read it, you really should get it and check it out. It's absolutely phenomenal. What was the name of the fellow again that was doing the
Dr. Russell Targ.
Russell Targ, yes. I'm familiar with him.
What was interesting about his statement, they asked me if I had any comments about Dr. Targ's statement. And I said, well, I do. I said, Dr. Targ, I'm not... I do not have the remote viewing acumen that you do, and therefore to use it. I said, but it doesn't mean we are without resources. I said, my abductees, some of which are perfect for some of the exercises that I've chosen, are going to get abducted anyway, so they're going to be on board the craft. And the question is, can I get them activated during the time the alien is in charge without the alien knowing it? And we've been able to do that. And I said, to your credit, and I'll underscore your statement, in one case, one of our abductees broke away and got into a large room that he wasn't supposed to be in on the craft, and found approximately 300 tanks filled with a white liquid in it that had human bodies in it.
Now, why do you suppose that was, or were they able to find out?
Nothing we could find out. They, at that point, he literally freaked out, started screaming, and of course they figured out where he was at, and sure. That was his last space jaunt for me, because you have to be able to keep your composure during these events, not letting them know that you're spying for me.
Yeah, exactly right. Did he mention what these extraterrestrials, these beings, I'm presuming they're extraterrestrials, but was there any comment on what they look like?
Well, he just described the standard grays, and the gray and the so-called doctor type in the craft. And then after they finished with him, they left him on the table. And at that moment, when he knew they were gone away and we started using some of the techniques that I'd taught, he was able to get up off the table and walk around and went into, of course, places where they say, you can never go there, you'll die. You know, well, you won't. And sure enough, he didn't die, but he did find a bunch of people that had died or were in some type of stasis in this white liquid. There were approximately 300 containers, and he did see definitely one body that the ship jolted just a tiny bit, and it, the face of one and the elbows and knees of the human inside it fell toward the glass, and at that point he started screaming.
Male or female?
He realized the guy was dead.
Male or female?
Male.
Did he see any females there?
That's the only one that he saw. The rest of the containers, he assumed they were all full of the same type people.
Sure.
And he just lost it completely.
Did he say what age this person might be?
Approximately around 30, age 30.
Yeah, that makes sense. It makes sense to me because of my own experiences, things that I've experienced. Not to sound vague, but we won't go into my stuff too much. But, do you have any theories on what is going on with this?
Well, it'd just be strictly guesses because, as you know, I like to deal in things that I can either prove or have good substantial evidence for.
Sure.
All we know at this point is that there are, on occasion, human mutilations on Earth. But according to Dr. Targ and some of our research, some of the more horrific stuff may go on board the craft out there further out, so to speak. And to what end, we don't know at this point.
I can't help but wonder if maybe these were fetuses that were being grown.
That's possible, but the one at 30 years old appeared to... it's possible they were being grown for some particular reason, but according to the witness, as far as he's concerned, the guy was dead and was being contained. I'm not sure that the individual was dead, but that was
sure
his representation, not being a good witness, so to speak.
Yeah, kind of like sticking a rat in formaldehyde or something. Wow,
yeah.
What a thing. So have you had any others that you've trained or have been trained that, you know, that's...
We have. I did an experiment back in 1991, late in the year. I asked a volunteer, a contactee, to volunteer for a program that I wanted to do, and she said, you never charge us a dime for anything you do. We love you, blah, blah, blah. And whatever you need, I'll do it. And I said, I just need your brain for just a while. And I said, it's likely they're going to pick you up in the near future. When they do, you're going to be ready. And without getting into the details, I had found information from another abductee that, in my opinion, if this information were known to the wrong people or the wrong entities, it would be very hazardous or dangerous for the alien. So I took that information from the abductee, something he had seen, and they apparently didn't catch, and installed it as if it were her memory in her own brain.
Mm-hmm.
And did this with all her permission. Then I installed amnesia on the front part of her memory so she couldn't remember it, and installed amnesia on the backside so that she could not relay where it came from if she ever got caught, so to speak.
Huh.
Long story short, about a month and a half later, she got abducted, and she was going through the abduction, you know, getting her clothes, trying to put her clothes on. They didn't care whether she had them on or not. And they were starting to take her. And when one of them got within 20 inches of her face, she instantly opened her eyes, was completely coherent, said, "Daryl knows what you're doing." That's not what I wanted her to say. But needless to say, that caused no small stir. Because on December 8th, 1992, and December 11th, 1992, three nights apart, there was a double mass abduction of eight people in two states and several cities. And a mass abduction, they got my senior investigator, her, and six others, took them in small craft to a very large craft. The reason we believe the story to be true is because the massive amount of physical evidence that we found on the house and the locations, the credibility of every witness, since they never got to talk to each other and they all told the same story. And then best of all, is the small ships were all taken to a larger craft that, according to the engineer, was approximately 50 miles thick, 600 miles across.
Wow.
The reason we think that might be true is I told my senior investigator, Dale, I said, "That sounds pretty wild." And he says, "I thought you'd say that, so I brought the video." And apparently a Japanese research team were looking at the moon at the same time and filmed that massive craft during their abduction. We think it might be one.
Wow. Wow, that's just mind-blowing. Because I've seen several videos of UFOs crossing across the moon and so forth. and penetration. Ingo Swann went to the dark side of the moon, and there was this massive craft there that he was inside of looking around like, "What is this?" You know, I asked him, you know, "Tell me." And he said, "I think they're still watching me. I'm a little worried about it." So, you know, but he did tell us a few things that I don't know if it's in the book or not now, because I've read the book and it's been a while. But what an amazing, amazing thing. And, you know, you recall back when, who was it? Was it the Russians that sent a probe to Mars? And the last thing the probe saw was this long, you know, cylindrical object they said was just massive before their probe just went silent.
The probe was about 11 and a half miles long and turned toward the Russian probe and fired a laser-like light toward it and sent the Russian probe as a spinner through space, which gave them the distinct impression that somebody didn't want them visiting Phobos.
The moons of Mars. That's the impression I got as well. Jumping back to this person in the tube, I just had a thought. I wanted to ask you another question about that. Was there any mention of ethnicity?
There was not, other than the fact that the person was an orangish color, like someone that had been on. Like some people eat a lot of carrots, and they get an orangish color from the keratin, and they thought that, or that he might have been absorbing some type of chemical inside the tank that might have resulted in some of his lighter skin color.
Sure. Well, that does make sense. You know, I hadn't considered that when you said orange, but that makes a lot of sense. Wow. So, how about repercussions toward you? I mean, this gal said, "Daryl knows what you're doing," and they abducted these other folks. You know, I've got some stories about this too, but I want to hear yours. Did they come after you?
Well, what happened was there was a reason they picked all these people up in this mass abduction. They wanted to know, in fact, what happened is Dale was ushered, the senior investigator, engineer, was ushered into this room. And the interesting thing is that the seven, I call them the seven models of alien that we have, that people talk about so much, the little gray, the bigger gray, the reptile, the Nordic, the Bigfoot, and a mantis being, they were all present. And they were standing scared in front of somebody sitting in a big chair. The guy in the big chair, apparently, because of the breach in security here, whatever that meant, whatever she blurted out, they were pretty upset by it. They wanted to find out where that breach was. Anybody in any intelligence community would want to do the same thing.
Sure.
And they looked at Dale. The guy sitting in the big chair looked at Dale and asked him mentally, why did he do this? And Dale said, your image came up and all the information about you. And he said, I looked at him and said, I don't know. Well, the guy was furious because when he asks a question, he gets an answer, and that's the end of it. And the tall Nordic being walks over and puts his forehead to Dale's forehead. And Dale is 5'2". This thing is like 6'8". And he has to stoop down to get his forehead to Dale's forehead, keeps looking at his, in his eyes, holding on the side of his face with his hands like this. And he looks back at the boss sitting in the chair and says, he doesn't know. And the guy cooled off. And, but the most important thing, I guess, of the whole thing for the audience was they wanted to know two specific things. They had two people in two rooms that were really important here. One was Dale. If you want to find out what I'm doing, you obviously would go after my senior investigator, which right. They did. The second thing was to go after the lady that I programmed, which they did. She was in the other room with another, these I call them mid-level management guys, higher than the alien,
right?
And that they were having to answer to. And the two questions that came up for both people in both rooms independently, the being to... the high beings there, mid-level management, produced an image of a human brain in front of Dale and also in front of that lady. And they asked Dale specifically, point to the human soul. Now, it was fascinating to me. They didn't know where that was at, but they knew all about it. And in the other room, the lady was asked to point to the human spirit when she saw an image of a human brain. And she said, no one really knows where that's at. And they're pretty upset by those answers, of course, because they want answers.
Sure.
And the last thing that they asked was really fascinating. They wanted to know, what is Project Prometheus?
Oh, now, what is that?
That interested me because it sounds like to me they abducted someone in the military or intelligence community, and he spilled the beans on Project Prometheus. And they won't know if it was real or not. And of course, Dale, no one knew at the time. Later, we found out that Project Prometheus is was an intelligence operation in which apparently the plan was to steal technology from the alien and use it for the quote unquote service of man, which means the intelligence community, of course.
Yeah. Oh. That just has my brain just circulating around trying to come up with some answers with this. It's very strange. So you've had these happen. When they got abducted, did they get abducted as a result of you hypnotizing them? Or how does that work? Because it sounds like you hypnotize them and a few days later they get abducted.
No, the fact is that these people are going to be taken within a year's time anyway, in most cases.
Okay, let me stop you there.
Will occur within a year.
How do you know that?
Well, we know based on their past. Like in my case, my events happened about every year and a half for 13 years. And so I could almost plan on it, so to speak, every year and a half.
Okay.
Some, they're coming back for whatever reason.
Yeah, because I had them come back every 10 years for 3 decades, and then nothing.
Well, you probably didn't need a tune-up, I think. Maybe we did.
Yeah. I need a new plugs. Gee whiz. Okay, well, that's damn interesting.
One of the fascinating things was when they left the craft, as they were leaving, they left, went through a huge room. He said the craft was so big, he said, you can't even imagine it. He said, we went through this massive room, and he said, and we were forced to keep our heads down and look straight ahead, very much like what the Nazis did to Jews and others in the concentration camps.
Right.
And I laughed and I said, you peaked. And he laughed and said, yes, I did. I said, what did you see there? He's an engineer. This is what he's going to do.
Sure, I would.
He said, I saw a lot of things, but he said, I could identify one very well. I said, what did you see? He said, not far from us was a platypodon. Platypodon is, think of it as a strange-looking elephant in the dinosaur times. And he described it and later drew a picture of it, of course. And in fact, there's one at the Natural Museum of History right in Houston, a platypodon with a giant Carcharodon megalodon shark swallowing. I mean, they've got it on display.
Wow.
It's kind of a neat thing. And that was what he saw. And I said, did you notice anything interesting about the platypodon? And he said, well, he said, there were other things out there too, and I think a lot of them. I said, what specifically? And he said, a lot of them, I think, were dinosaurs and maybe other things. He said, but the important thing, I don't think any of them were dead.
Wow.
He said, I think they were in stasis of some type, in other words, just had to be woke up, so to speak. But he said that's what that hole was all about. It was huge. And that's what they did not want us to see.
Isn't that something? God, what else might be there?
Really?
You know, these people seem to have been with this planet for a very long time. Do you suppose they might have had some hand in the direction that has the people of this world have taken? You know, solely, or, you know, other people are interfering with them, who knows? But what do you think?
Well, I have several different views about that. I in my investigations, I use seven different hats to investigate. My UFO hat, which most people use for everything they do,
mm-hmm.
Is fallible, real fallible. It gets fooled. It's been fooled before. And I don't like to use that hat very often. It's an enjoyable hat, but it's not a scientific hat. It's not a medical hat. It's not a cop hat. I like my cop hat real well because it goes directly for the throat, so to speak, looks for the truth, doesn't believe your story, and wants you to prove it, basically, and looks for flaws. Because if you can find flaws in the story and you find the story's already false, why in the world would you try to prove it to be true? What's the point?
Absolutely.
So with these seven hats that I use, one's a profiler hat, another's a spiritual hat, another's a Native American hat, and so on and so on. These seven hats give me 7 or 14 sets of eyes, if you like, to look at any event. And if I need more than one set of eyes or two or three, then others can chime in. And the thing about the hats is that they don't all agree with each other. So that, again, I like that because it gives me different points of view that are not coming from the same narrative, so to speak.
Right.
So in answer to your question, what's going on, I suspect that based on my research, that we have 7 primary alien types that show up in the literature. And there are people swear there are a million kinds, there are 100 kinds or 50 kinds or whatever.
Quite a few.
No one's ever proven that to me, but whatever. It's, you know, it's, I haven't seen everything and I know it. But these seven we're very sure of. And in my opinion, what we're looking at is 7 models. Like if you go to the Chevrolet company, you look at a Chevette, you look at a Corvette Stingray. You're just looking at 7 models, not 7 races. But 7 models, is somebody's hat's clone made, manufactured, or designed for here to make us think those particular seven clowns are from outer space and therefore here to help us fix the planet and fix those on the hole or whatever. None of which they've done in the last 6 to 12,000 years. But that's the big thing in my opinion. And when I brought this up at a shoot in the TV shoot in Los Angeles this weekend, the director asked the question, how many races of aliens are out there? And I said, well, according to ancient literature in India, there's over 100,000 races. I said, I don't know how they figured that out, because I know I haven't met 100,000 races out there. So if there is, you know, maybe there is, I don't know. I said, in my opinion, if we meet, quote unquote, real aliens, quote unquote, they're not going to act like some of these guys. Some of these guys that mutilate our cattle, steal our children, women, and mutilate people too from time to time. And I find that very disconcerting. And you can mess with me and I'll get over it. But you come after my children and I'll hunt you down. That's why they call me the alien hunter.
Didn't that happen though, Daryl? Was something about your child?
It did happen. They came and got him when he was six. And I went from a concerned parent to a hunter at that point, from the victim to the prey. And he was a prey, and so I started hunting them at that point. And that's why I did the mass abduction, why I designed an opportunity for them, us to spy on them, so to speak, on some of these craft. I figured out how to get inside their headspace instead of them getting inside of our headspace. I like the real intelligence comes from being inside their head, not from what you saw or what you remember or what you think.
Right.
It's what you actually found out in their headspace.
Now, I've been taken a couple of times by these people you're talking about. And it's always been very challenging. You know, whenever you have an instance where something like this happens, your ability to believe that it's real is you know, so suspended. It's like you're just not, your mind is fighting against you.
Yes. I think you're exactly right. That's you're right on target. And the thing about the UFO event, whether you see an alien, whether you get next to a UFO or have an event, whether they take you or whether they just come in your room, anytime you've been near one, you've already been programmed. People say, well, I've been implanted. That's highly unlikely. Implants are extremely rare. And I look at hundreds of x-rays every year, and they're just not there in most cases. The point is that a person could still be programmed. You don't need an implant or anything else. They can still do a lot of what they want to do. Simply, they can find you. They know where you're at. They know how to get to you. And this is just a fact of life. And ask any abductee who's tried to flee away from them and move to different states or different countries, only to find them find you later.
Yeah, there's
without an implant. The implant's irrelevant at that point. They know where your neural signature is.
Yeah, it seems to be the case. We were in Peru, living there in a place called Moyobamba. And this is about 3,000 feet elevation. So it'd be like the middle jungle. It was very much jungle. And one night I found myself amidst all these other people from this town. And so, you know, at first I was like, it's a dream. I'm just all floaty. And you know, my mind, you know, is like okie dokie with it. But then I became completely cogent, which every time I've ever been abducted, I always become completely cogent after about a minute or two. So now I'm watching what's happening. There are these men, let's say, that were dressed like monks. They had hoods and robes, and they were ushering these people, you know, through the jungle. We walked for, at that point, I don't know how long I'd walked, but it didn't seem like very long. I was just sort of suddenly there. And they were walking towards this edifice in the valley. If you take a look at Moyobamba, you'll notice the particular thing about it is in the very center of this valley is a gigantic domed rock. It must be 1,000 feet tall. It's quite large. And these folks were all in single file, you know, a little bit of space between them, probably about 50 to 70 people. I didn't count them. And they were all walking towards this rock and going into what looked like a church. So when I saw that, I thought, there's no church out here. I've been to this damn rock before. And then I saw what it was. It was some kind of a large spaceship. And then one of the, because I stopped walking, I'm standing there looking around, and they're not paying much attention to me. They're focusing on these people walking in, herding them in one by one. And so I shouted out, I said, "Hey, what the hell are you guys doing anyway?" Then they turned around and looked at me. I don't know if they have a surprise look that they can have, but if they did, then it would have been a surprise look. And they had like these staffs that then became like metal rods, not wood. And they were coming after me. And so I was a little intimidated by that, so I decided I was going to back up a little bit, and there was another one behind me. Well, long story short, I took off running through the jungle and got scraped and fell and mud between your toes, as you might imagine. And the people that I'd had contact with years ago, the one person's name is Zoe. These look like people, just like you and I. He showed up and basically was there, and then suddenly I wasn't there. I woke up the next morning with scrapes on my shins, a couple on my arms, and mud between my toes. So I knew it was a real thing that had happened. So I decided I was going to just do a little bit more investigating. So when people say this sort of thing isn't real, you know, there's no way to explain this. Kathy was asking me, "Would you get in bed with your feet all muddy last night? You know, where'd you get these scrapes at? You're bleeding." She was there. She woke up beside me. We were sleeping together. So
luckily your feet hung off the bed, so you didn't get them.
Well, yeah, the beds in those places come just, you know, above my ankles anyway. It's how long they are. But what a thing. I mean, here you've got people being abducted. So they took your child not once but twice?
They actually took him a number of times. Some of his events occasionally may still be going on. He's an adult now, of course. He's had some pretty horrific events. The thing that really upset me the most was when they took my son the first time, when he was 6 years old, I woke up in the middle of the night and I jumped out of the bed, ran as fast as I could through the house. I didn't go to his room, because I knew he wasn't in there. I knew they'd come for him. And it was the same feeling that I had every time they came. So you sense when they're there. And I went into the kitchen and dining room area, and there he was looking out the back door. And I asked him, "What is he doing?" And he said, "Looking at the little red light." Well, that was the screen image that they left with him to just make him forget. So my wife gets up out of bed. She walks up, sees him, sees me, looks at him again, and says, "What's going on?" That was where I had to belly up to the bar, so to speak, and tell her the truth. I'd never told her about my abductions. And I told her that they'd come for him.
Well, that brings up a pretty good point, because, you know, I've been in relationships where if you start talking about this, it isn't exactly met favorably. What, you know, how did this work, you know, within your relationship when your wife finds this out and now they're coming for your son? How, what was her take on this? Did she believe you?
She was not real happy with the fact that I now told her. And ever since then, I've, of course, told her everything she needed to know. But she and my son both begged me to work with him to find out the details of what happened, other than the things he knew. And I really didn't want to. I had serious misgivings about that. And one day we were walking down the road, and we lived out in the area near where the famous Cash Landrum case occurred. We lived right down the street from it, practically. And my son and I were walking along, and he looked at me and said, "Dad, my consciousness has changed since that event. I no longer care for people like I used to." And that really upset me, that a child's life could be affected and done on purpose like this. So I was pretty pretty bent about that. And he's a good kid, very sharp, very smart. But the fact is, I knew how protective he was over people. I mean, amazingly so.
And, now tell me again, what did he say? Because I didn't quite catch that.
He said, "My consciousness has been changed. I no longer care for people like I used to."
Oh my God!
That event.
Good heavens!
So that bothered him a great deal, and just like a. It's like somebody injected you with Novocaine, so to speak, in your consciousness, since you just don't care for people as much as you used to.
Well, that is, you know, very startling, actually. Very startling. I'm sure you were just floored.
I was pretty upset by it.
Did that ever change over time?
Not really. It's part of programming, and let me go back and explain that one very quickly. If you've been near a UFO or an alien or an event like that, you've already been programmed. And what that means is there's certain things that are already true at that event and probably will be manifest more and more as more and more contact is made. Good example. A lady just filled out her forms yesterday, and she said, she wrote back, she's a professional, and she said, "It's like you're reading my mail. How in the world do you know to ask all these questions? Things I would have never thought about, and they're part of my memory. How did you know?" I said, "Because I'm one of you. I know exactly what happened to you, and I know a lot about the events and how it's happened to you, and sometimes why." And anyway, it was, this is part of the program. Some people start developing obsessive compulsive behavior.
Sure.
They'll get up and leave their house, then they'll come back in, lock the door, open it again, go out in the car, sit in the car. Did I do that? Go back and check it again. And they never had these problems before. This is part of the program. There are a number of different things. Our statistics are full of these things. 45% of people taken in our events, in UFO events, are Native American, Indian, Irish, Celtic, Scottish. And up to a third of them, in one small study, had rare drug allergies, procaines, such as Xylocaine, Lidocaine, Novocaine, Carbocaine. And you say, "Well, what's the big deal about that?" Go tell your dentist that Novocaine, that you have an allergic reaction to it, and he'll just laugh at you. It's such a rare allergy, they don't even check for it. They just
right.
Don't. Same thing with your ophthalmologist. You put a procaine on your eye to relax your eye to test it, and they will not, they don't. My senior investigator, Dale, when he came back from one of the abduction events, he came back with a hematoma in his eye, where a needle had been inserted into his eye, caused a blood area, a hematoma. And his doctor, the surgeon, says, What happened to your eye, Dale? And he said, I don't know. He was lying, of course. And he said, yes, you do. He said, there's no way you can have a hematoma like that and not know it. Well, what happened? And he said, I'm going to check your eye here. And he said, well, that's a procaine, isn't it? He said, yes. And he said, well, don't put it on my eye because I'm allergic to procaines. Well, the ophthalmologist put it on his eye anyway, because, like I said, it's such a rare allergy. No one even checks for it. Well, Dale fell over in coma as soon as he put it on his eye.
Good heavens.
So that was a mistake. And later the doctor questioned him if they got that all taken care of and said, what happened to your eye? And he said, they drove a large needle into my eye. And the doctor was horrified, and he told him that it was the alien that did it. And he said, Daryl Sims is my hypnotherapist, and he was able to recover these memories for me. And the doctor looked at him and says, don't you move, and pointed at him just like that. Don't move. He got on the phone and calls another doctor, a stomach doctor, gastroenterologist, mm-hmm. and says, we got another one.
Oh,
now,
no
that's
shit.
Interesting.
Out of curiosity, was he allergic to this medication before the abductions?
Yes.
Okay.
We don't know which came first, the chicken or the egg. I suspect some of these people are allergic to the procaines because they've been given them. Perhaps. I don't know. That's a guess.
All right. Fair enough. So they've got another one. Wow. Huh. I'm just, you know, sitting back just thinking about all this, and I'm sure everyone listening is as well. And it's a hell of a scary thing.
It is.
So in your hunting, I mean, you've come up with all this information, all this research. Have you, I guess I'm trying to think what the question should be, how it should be phrased, but have you grabbed any of them, I guess, is really what I'm wanting to know.
We set up a trap in the Snowmass Wilderness using an abductee, again, my senior investigator, the engineer, as bait, because every year he goes up there on vacation, he gets abducted. So I took about seven investigators up there and trained them personally, and had someone to sit outside his tent literally from dusk to dawn right there at the very front of his tent, so that if anybody came through there with and they had light and everything, the whole area was lit up, so that we would be able to see that and know what was going on. Long story short, they came on the last night. We were there like 7 days, seven nights. They came on the seventh night when we retired. And it's a long story, but for those that are interested in the story, I'll be glad to send it to you on email. Just go to thealienhunter.com and click on Alien Hunter, and it'll email me and say, ask for the case where you almost caught the alien. But I was within 18 inches of him. He was right outside my tent. I could see the shadow from the light we had in the middle to the outside of my tent. He was in the wrong tent. He was trying to get in the wrong one. And I had a huge Cutco knife about 18 inches from him, and I thought about sticking it through the tent and getting him. And there's some people would say, well, that would be horrible. That's cruel. That's awful. The fact is, they're a dime a dozen. Nobody, the alien doesn't care anything about their little models. They could care less about them. A dime a dozen, literally. And but I didn't do that because I thought it would be more useful to see if I could still communicate with the alien. Because, I mean, I've not been abducted since I was 17. So instead, I decided to see if I could communicate with him. And it was the most amazing thing I could.
Oh, really?
And the amazing thing that I found, again, getting inside his head instead of just being a victim, so to speak, is that there was nothing in his head, nothing. The only thoughts he has are the orders that he gets. It's easier to think of him as an avatar. And he's just there to do the bidding of someone else. And later he came around to the back of my tent and scratched on it. Now, some people have this happen during their abduction events. They're not scratching on your tent. Whoever's up there in the craft is supposed to, I call it nuke the tent. In other words, make it available for them to walk through. And he's trying to come through, and they know there's something wrong, and they did. I'm sitting in there with a 16-inch long Cutco knife waiting for you. Somebody in the craft up there realizes this is not right. You know, this guy, get out of there. Go to your wrong tent. So this is kind of funny. And he left, went to another guy's tent. The other guy described someone scratching on his tent. That was the wrong tent. The little grays have an IQ of about 80. It's about the IQ of a moron. Mm-hmm. You say, well, it's not being pejorative, and I'm not doing that. I'm simply telling you these are things that you can deduce yourself from your own events. They can't get your clothes on right. They'll often put you in the wrong location. They'll pick you up in one spot, put you in the wrong one. They'll put you back in the couch instead of in your bed, have your clothes on inside out, backwards. I mean, they make huge mistakes. So wow. That's how close we came to getting him that night.
Yeah, I came close to getting one, too, one night in Fountain Hills, Arizona. I had just worked on Kevin Smith a few nights before. They had tried to do an abduction on him, warning him not to talk about certain things. They showed up and they gave him radiation burns on his wrists. So Kevin and I got together right away, and I worked on him as a healer. All that stuff just started fading right away very quickly. But they were not very happy with what I had done.
No.
And I'll tell you the rest of that in just a few minutes, because it's time for us to take a break. Yeah, kind of at the top of the hour here, folks. Let me just see here if I can get this right. Maybe I can this time. I screw this up all the time, Daryl, so. There we go. There's the music bed coming in. So, folks, we'll be back in just a few minutes. For you who are listening on the radio server, it will be switched off here in just a few minutes, actually a few seconds. I invite you to become a member of our community at patreon.com. So we'll be back right after this. Don't go away. It's getting better and better. So I'm going to push the right button here.